Hey, Strong Stance listeners. I tried to do my usual upbeat intro, but I'm not feeling it. And to be honest, I haven't felt it in a while. I want to talk today about the break I've taken from the show up until now, where my head's at, which I think a lot of you may relate to. And I want to talk about some recent personal, political, and trans-related happenings. And for only the second time ever, I'm alone in this show. No guests, just me. So stay with me. I'm your host, Eli Strong, and you're listening to The Strong Stance. So before I get into this, I need to state that I've been really angry for the last several weeks, and in some ways, the last couple of years. As of late, it's affected my sleep, my ability to focus, and it colors my view of practically everything. I'm not saying that, you know, that it's all bad. Anger can be good. It can be helpful. It's a real and authentic human emotion and can speak volumes about how you feel hurt or wronged. Not expressing anger, like trying to deny it, not feel it, or stuffing it, can lead to mental, emotional, and physical distress. Having said all that, I've got to find a way to process all this mess because at this point, I personally feel like it's moving out of the realm of helpful and healthy and into the realm of problematic. I also tend to be one of those folks where anger and stress feed off of each other. I started exercising again because that has historically helped me manage both stress and anger, but thus far it is not helping. For those of you who regularly listen to the show, I'm sure you've noticed that there hasn't been a new show in about 2 months. Part of that break is the sheer volume of events that have gone on, leaving me with zero time to actually produce anything. But the other part of that break has literally been a loss for what to say about all that has transpired in the last month or two. First, I want to talk about what has been weighing most heavily on my mind, and that is the murder of trans people and the everyday violence we face, particularly when it comes to trans women of color. We just passed another Transgender Day of Remembrance, and we again had way too many names to read on that day. I was asked to join my friend Leah Scholl in the pulpit at Wake Forest Baptist Church for a dialogue sermon on that Sunday morning. It was good to be able to honor my community in that way, but it was so incredibly hard. It abraded what little healing I had done in the previous weeks and left me kind of raw and hurting all over again. TDOR is always difficult because we're not only reminded of all those we've lost, but we often are also reminded that most cis folks are only the best allies after we've died rather than while we still breathe. And if this isn't abundantly clear, your allyship means nothing after we're dead if you do nothing while we're alive. This year for Trans Day of Remembrance, I want to lift up and acknowledge those lives cut short by anti-trans violence and discrimination, whether it be murder or suicide, stabbing or shooting, or even the continued refusal of adequate medical care until it's too late, as was the case with Sharmus Outlaw in Washington, D.C. We also, on TDOR, make an attempt to celebrate the resilience of the trans community in the face of that violence, which obviously is, it's always kind of a bittersweet and not very easy thing to do. But I found the names of 27 people who have lost their lives to this violence in 2016. That number does not include suicides or those that were unidentified or misidentified. I want to call those names in remembrance of their lives and their lived experiences. Jasmine Sierra, Monica Luera, Caden Clark, Veronica Banks, Maya Young, DeMarcus Stansberry, Kadari Candice Johnson, Courtney Dawson Yoakum, Shantae Isaac, Kiana Blakeney, Reese Walker, Mercedes Successful, Amos Bede, Goddess Diamond, Sharmus Outlaw, Daniquia Dodds, D. Wiggum, Sky Maccabee, Erica Tiarina, Raylan Thomas, Lexi Saronin, Titi Safour, Crystal Edmonds, Jazz Alford, Brandy Bledsoe, Simon Sierra Bush, and Noonie Norwood. So, in addition to the weight of all of this violence and the anniversary of TDOR, let's talk about what's been going on that has led me to where I currently stand. We have officially moved from Georgia to North Carolina. This was a move that I never really talked about on the show, but something that's been in the works for the last several months. I will only speak for myself when I say that I was hopeful when I moved to Georgia that we would find what we were looking for and perhaps find some community while we were there. As it turned out, that didn't happen. In short, I hated Georgia. Hated it. Was it all bad? No. But really, almost none of it was great either. While I met a few trans folks that I could truly call friends, I had to drive an hour or more to get to any trans person that I could find. And I recognize that that can be worse for some people, but coming out of D.C. and being right in the middle of the community, it was a huge gear shift without much tapering. I fell into a depression and an anger that I had not felt in a number of years. Simply put, I wanted basically nothing to do with cisgender people. And even some of the trans people I met were horribly racist, xenophobic, and reeked of toxic masculinity. So the depression and anger have been there for at least a year now, but it has and did progressively get worse. So we made the decision to leave. Now, I'm not saying that North Carolina is some haven of equality where none of those problems exist, but the sheer noise that HB2 made was partly because, in many ways, it was and is a policy that is so uncharacteristic of North Carolina and most of the people that I have met here, that live here, that are from here, that grew up here. Similar, but not nearly as far-reaching, discrimination bills passed around the same time in Mississippi and other far right-wing states. But the talk around those died almost as soon as it started, because, hell, it's Mississippi. Nobody even talks about the bills that have passed in those states very often anymore. But everybody, at least in some way, are still talking about HB2 and the effort to kind of repeal that. I started to become hopeful of the new location and what it could mean for my hopefully growing family. I had already started to connect with really great anti-racist, trans, and queer-centered people that are not an hour's drive away. So we go through the stress and the costs of, and frankly, the time consumption of packing all of our stuff and moving 350 miles to an apartment less than half the size of where we were before. And we get to North Carolina, and then I have to immediately travel for my day job. where I did get a few bright shining moments of trans brilliance with some amazing Black trans leaders over food, drinks, and some, as usual, amazing conversation. And then came the election, and then the Trans Day of Remembrance. And between those two, Goddess Lourdes Ashley Hunter, a friend and warrior, was violently dragged out of her home, a home that she has opened to me and so many others as a safe space, a safe trans space of gathering. And she was arrested on a false accusation of assault in front of a dinner party full of witnesses taking video by 16 police officers. 16 cops, one Black trans woman. Thankfully, she was released several hours later and made it back to her home in the early morning hours, but not without injuries from the whole ordeal. Side note, if you'd like to help fund the work that Lourdes does, and I've talked about the Trans Women of Color Collective several times on this show, but if you'd like to help fund the work that Lourdes does or help with legal fees, or really just pour into the work that trans women of color do, you can go to www.twocc.us and donate to the Trans Women of Color Collective. So let's go back a tick and talk about this election. Did this election piss me off? Yes. And not just the results. The whole campaign leading up to it was so unbelievably exhausting. The vitriol Trump was spewing was empowering bigots and racists all across the country, and the rest of his supporters did little to nothing to shout down either their words or actions, much less their candidate. Within the left, there was obviously a lot of ugliness that sprouted up between some of the pro-Bernie camp and the pro-Clinton camp. The country was basically in a no-win situation with a system built on elevating the rights and privileges of the white, cis, hetero, male population. And my anger grew as I watched Facebook friends and folks in person shame people for voting third party or not voting at all, when honestly, I can totally understand both of those choices, particularly in this election. The whole purpose of an election, I mean, in my opinion, is to vote for the person who fits with your ideals. If that person is third party, so be it. Vote for them, particularly since garnering a small percentage of votes can mean moving toward more options and away from a broken two-party system. And if that candidate that meets your ideals or your minimum requirements doesn't exist, I also totally support someone's decision to not vote at all. Voting within a system based on and uplifting white supremacy doesn't look like revolution to everyone, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. And the articles about how voting third party or not voting at all was, quote, the height of white privilege left me baffled. I knew plenty of people that voted third party or didn't vote at all. And guess what? Maybe one of them was white. And I'm being gracious with that one because actually I can't recall any of them being white as I go through that list. The bulk of them were actually queer and trans people of color. Right? These are people that could not find it within themselves to cast a vote or to put support towards a candidate that they felt would do little to nothing to alleviate the white supremacist system that we all live in. And if that's not something that you can support with a vote, there's nothing wrong with that. Now, am I saying that Hillary was an awful candidate? No. Am I saying she was the perfect candidate? Also, no. I disagree with her on a few issues, but the bulk of what she stands for, I'm down with. She is one of the most qualified candidates that's likely ever run for president, particularly in the modern era. Am I saying Donald Trump was an awful candidate? Unequivocally, yes. He has no record of public service and will be the first president in history to have neither military nor political experience, and he is wholly unqualified. He built his campaign on fear, misogyny, racism, xenophobia, misinformation, when there was any information at all, threats, and childish behavior. The president of the United States or the leader of any country should be held to at least the same standard we expect of our children in school and in public. And he was held to less. He encouraged and admitted to violence and assault on women and encouraged assaulting his critics. He made fun of folks with disabilities. He body-shamed women and infantilized anyone who dared to challenge him. And all of it's on tape, both video and audio. And for those of you who incorrectly think that all he ever did was be mean to people, as if all of that wasn't enough to render him unfit, let me repeat, he is wholly unqualified. He wants to repeal and replace Obamacare, for example, but during the campaign never states how or what he planned to replace it with. Quote unquote, something terrific is not a policy, and neither is believe me. The number of times I shouted with what or but how at my television during the debates became almost comical, particularly during the Republican debates. And he never was able to explain. Now look, I get that many of the Trump supporters claim to want something different and they're tired of politics as usual. But when you have a heart attack and your cardiologist isn't giving you the right or best treatment, you find another cardiologist. You don't hire an architect or a shoe salesman or a carnival barker. And to add icing to the phobia and ism cake, he chose Mike Pence as his vice president. Pence is not only known for his discriminatory laws against queer and trans folks, as well as being horrible on women's rights, he's also tried to divert funds from HIV/AIDS groups to ex-gay groups. And let's not forget his belief in conversion therapy and the use of public funding to pay for it. If you're unfamiliar with conversion therapy, simply put, it's aversion techniques up to and including electroshock therapy, intended to make queer people straight. The practice has been debunked and discredited, as well as opposed by basically every major physical and mental health organization. We're not talking about unheard of organizations. We're talking about the APA. We're talking about the AMA. We're talking about NASW and scores of others. Many people consider it child abuse and incredibly detrimental, and it increases rates of depression and suicide, anxiety, homelessness, etc., etc. And let's not forget on this World AIDS Day that as governor, Mike Pence passed a series of policies and legislations that led to the worst HIV outbreak in Indiana's history. Now, since the election, Trump has broken his promise to, quote, drain the swamp, by tapping establishment Republicans and the wealth of Wall Street to his cabinet and transition team. They are among the most vehement in anti-LGBT and racist sentiment and make up the wealthiest cabinet in the modern era. So you can forget fair tax code, or the concerns of the middle and working class, or the equal rights of queer folks and other minorities. And if your concern was getting money and Wall Street out of politics, it's going to be a long 4 years. Quick rundown of his likely picks. National Security Advisor Michael Flynn basically labeled all Muslims as radicals and said that fear of an entire religion and all of its followers is rational. Attorney General Jeff Sessions, who Republicans said was too racist for a federal court appointment in 1986 and was quoted as saying he thought the KKK was okay until he found out they smoked weed. He's fought against legal immigration, and he's an anti-science climate change skeptic. White House strategist Steve Bannon, who turned Breitbart into the platform site for white supremacy propaganda, has a history of domestic abuse, has made anti-Semitic statements, and is celebrated by white nationalists, Nazi groups, and a former leader of the KKK. Secretary of Homeland Security David Clark wants to suspend habeas corpus, claims that Black Lives Matter will join forces with ISIS, called the Pulse massacre in Orlando a distraction, and said that trans people are freaks and suffer from mental disorders. Transition team member Chris Kobach wants a Muslim registry, and was the architect of the Show Me Your Papers laws in Arizona and a number of other states, parts of which have been struck down as unconstitutional. Secretary of State David Petraeus pleaded guilty to giving classified information to his mistress and thus bars him from holding federal office. Seriously, If Trump taps him, he would have to pardon him first. Petraeus would have to ask his parole officer for permission to leave his area in North Carolina just to do his job. Also up for Secretary of State, Rudy Giuliani, who stated that before Obama came along, we didn't have any successful radical Islamic attacks in the U.S. He's apparently forgetting about 9/11 when he was mayor of New York City. He's also a staunch supporter of New York's Stop and Frisk program. Secretary of Transportation Elaine Chao violated the Hatch Act and rolled back mine safety inspections. Secretary of Health and Human Services Tom Price, anti-choice and opposes marriage equality. Secretary of Education Betsy DeVos actively works against public education. EPA transition leader Myron Bell is a climate change skeptic. As the EPA transition leader. I could go on. But what angers and scares me even more than Donald Trump and his potential appointments are the people he has emboldened. The white supremacists, racists, and homophobes that are shooting black folks and beating queer folks and snatching scarves off of Jewish and Muslim women's heads and leaving threatening notes on cars and front doors and shouting white power in schools, all in the name of Trump's America. The occurrences of hate crimes and violent beatings and shootings and hate speech and spray-painted swastikas skyrocketed in the days after the election. These people are bolstered by one of their own, soon to be inaugurated to the highest political office in this country, and they are making sure that every minority knows that they should be afraid. And Trump isn't racing out to say, no, no, that's not me, that's not what I believe or what I stand for. He's not speaking out about or condemning the violent acts committed in his name, which makes him culpable. And can we please stop normalizing the, quote, alt-right? That's not their name. This is a movement of people that are centered around racism, sexism, white nationalism, and anti-Semitism. Call them racists. Call them white supremacists. Call them white nationalists. That's what they are. Call them what they are. And I'm so sick of hearing Trump supporters say that the protests are stupid, or that we should give him a chance, or that we should just come together. 8 years President Obama was in office and you fought him every step of the way. There were protests and racism and false accusations about his religion and birthplace and citizenship. And then when the most divisive major candidate in at least the last two generations comes along, you want us to just come together. Nah, no thanks. Protesting is at the fundamental core of the First Amendment and has a long history as an avenue to fight injustice. In fact, just stop telling minorities how to protest at all. If you bash non-peaceful protests, but then also complain about peaceful protests, silent protests, kneeling or sitting during national anthems, die-ins, acts of solidarity, then you're really just trying to silence minorities from speaking against an oppressive system. No protest will ever be good enough for you or right in your eyes. Just admit it and move on. Stop kidding yourself. The majority has no right to dictate the voices and lived experiences of the minority. And oh my God, the Trump supporters shouting that they aren't all racist or sexist or homophobic or transphobic, hashtag not all Trump supporters, hashtag not all white people, hashtag not all men. Even if you don't think you are racist or homophobic or transphobic, those things were clearly not deal breakers for you. You gave your candidate a pass on all the evil, ugly shit he said and did and encouraged and ignored. And that makes you complicit. You are complicit in the enslavement of black and brown minds and bodies at the hands of white people and the government and the prison industrial complex. You are complicit in the murder of trans lives at the hands of cis people. You are complicit in both the spread of rape culture and the action of rape. You are complicit in the subjugation and discrimination of anyone who is not white, cis, straight. You are complicit in my discrimination. And I have every right to be angry about that. I don't think I'm ready to forgive, and I will certainly never forget. Something broke inside me those first 2 weeks of November. And everything that's happened since has widened the gap in that break. I can't seem to adequately process any of this. So I'm having a really hard time beginning to heal. I find myself exhausted at night, yet laying there wide awake in bed with this pressing urge to leave, to put on my shoes and just run. Not away, but just run, for purely a lack of anything else to do, and too much anger and mind spinning to sleep. I've started working out again, but it's not helping. I've tried working more and working less. I've tried praying more and praying less. I've tried drinking more and drinking less, speaking more and speaking less. Nothing seems to work. I just find myself broken, angry, and trying to process the last month. But that just leads me to the last year or two. And then I can't remember when I got so angry. I know I'm not alone in these feelings, and I know I need to build some trans community here in this new area. I'm just not sure how ready I am for new people. I don't know, man. That's just where I'm at. So I guess in closing, I just want to send peace, love, and understanding to my trans and queer siblings. I hope I can find more of you soon, and I hope we can start to heal. Happy holidays to those of you that celebrate. Thanks for listening, y'all. Join me next time on The Strong Stance.